أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Again, it is a privilege and honor to be here, this time as part of the Ahlul Bayt Forum, the same location and collaboration with the Muslim group, but being involved with the Ahlul Bayt Forum as well, which has been an ongoing effort by the Baytul Alm Islamic Center and the Ahlul Bayt Islamic Seminary that has recently, I think last year, we had the grand opening of, and I hope that this effort continues and we're able to come together and share thoughts and ideas. I think we can all agree that the presentations that were given before me were very thought-provoking, and they each addressed the matter from a particular angle. One, I guess I would say, addressing some of the particular areas in which the Holy Prophet has been depicted in a incorrect fashion. And the other, addressing the matter in a more broad sense and focusing on trying to give us a direction that we can take in trying to engage in discussions related to the Holy Prophet when efforts are made to defame the Holy Prophet or questions are raised in that regard. What I'm going to address in my brief moments, and I may even end early, is something from a different perspective. I feel that I am here discussing the matter of defending the Holy Prophet in a particular context, meaning I don't remember having conferences a few years ago or a couple of decades ago with regards to the Holy Prophet in trying to defend his image, although some of the academic work that was mentioned and suggested in the previous presentation have been around for quite some time. Whether it's related to the Holy Prophet, his character, some of the things he did, or it is related to Islam, the compilation of the Holy Quran. I remember being in a interfaith session in Dundee, Scotland, a couple years back, and there was a professor from Dallas that was residing in Britain, and he had this entire presentation to try to prove that the Holy Quran is not what the Holy Prophet left us with, and it is not the revelation that was revealed upon our beloved Prophet. To the contrary of what people think, it is actually the Bible, which are the words of Christ. And this notion that the Bible isn't what we have from Jesus and was compiled later on, and it's not accurate, and it's not actually the words of Jesus, it is the contrary. So all of this has existed. This is not new. What I do find new in the recent decades, and particularly last year, that I think led to this conference having the name, meaning the Muslim Group Conference, having the name that it has and the topic. And to my understanding, or my guess, I guess, I haven't spoken exactly to the organizers of the Ahlul Bayt Forum, but I think the reason would be similar to discuss this matter. There are recent events that have taken place that have led to us coming together and wanting to discuss the character of the Holy Prophet and what's being said about him. And what those incidents are is that there's a book that some of us may have forgotten about. The book written by Salman Rushdie, and that whole fatwa that we have heard about, and up to today, that man goes around with bodyguards and they don't reveal exactly where he's going to be at, according to my little bit of knowledge, of course, and this is what I haven't looked into the matter. I hope it's the case that they still have that fear, and I hope he carries that fear with him wherever he goes. We've had that book, but more recently we've had a series of cartoons, the last of which, again, I haven't looked into the matter to the extent where I would be searching all of the media outlets and every magazine that is published in every country in the world and every city to see if there's any more cartoons that are being produced or not. But the one that made headlines and led to the killing of a number of people in France were the cartoons that were produced in that magazine in France, which led to those incidents. So what I'm trying to say is there's something beyond academic writings, something other than questions that are posed with regards to particular verses of the Holy Quran or the conduct of the Holy Prophet, a hadith found in a particular book of hadith or history. It's media on a large scale, mass media, trying to say things about the Holy Prophet and then show the reaction of the mu'mineen, the believers, the muslimin throughout the globe regarding that. So what I want to say is, related to this aspect, in other words, if we want to be defensive or defending the Holy Prophet in this context, what can we keep in mind? What are some of the pointers that we can discuss in this brief time that we have? Recite a salawat, please. I will begin by repeating what the previous presenter said. I am no one to be able to defend the Holy Prophet, and I don't think anyone needs to defend the Holy Prophet. What needs to happen is we need to clarify who the Holy Prophet actually was. In other words, I feel that that is going on the defensive. I don't feel that we need to go on the defensive. I feel that the reason why some of these things are being produced is a reaction. Is a reaction to the progress that Islam and the Muslimin have had over the recent decades especially. And a fear of the Western people taking Islam a bit more seriously, reading into it, learning more about it, and accepting it. And the numbers are growing. When we read the verses of the Holy Quran, which tell us very precisely the history of prophets, when any prophet would come, when the people of influence would see that the masses are attracted to that message, they would use various tactics to prevent the masses from listening to the teachings of that prophet and to push them away from that. One of the tactics that would be always used, and you can look at the various examples in the Holy Quran, whether it's Prophet Nuh, it is Prophet Hud or Salih, whichever of these prophets you look at the examples of, you see that there is mockery going on. There are lies that are made up. They are made up. They said that the Quran is sihr. The Quran is magic. The words of the Prophet are magic. He's a magician. They said that with regards to Prophet Musa as well. They said that with regards to other prophets as well. Was that because there was some evidence of there being magic? No. It wasn't a genuine, if we want to call it by today's standards, some form of an academic research or endeavor to try to raise questions. No. As some of the verses of the Holy Quran talk about some of those individuals, particularly Fir'aun, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَجَحَدُوا بِهَا وَاسْتَيْقَنَتْهَا أَنفُسُهُمْ. They went against it. Fir'aun went against the teachings of Musa. وَاسْتَيْقَنَتْهَا أَنفُسُهُمْ. They were certain that what is being said is true. It's not a genuine question. We've got to be mindful of that reality. We've got to be mindful of that reality in the way we're going to be responding to any of this. If we're going to be taking the words of those and the actions and the behavior and the cartoons and what have you of those who are not there to ask a question, who are not there to receive an answer and a response from you, if we treat them as someone that has a genuine question, then the result of what we're going to get is not going to be productive. In other words, we have not dealt with the matter. If we want to look at the discipline of theology, for example, you see the theologians when it comes to when it comes to defending the religion, well, they would provide arguments. There are various arguments proving the existence of God. But then in their debates with someone who is trying to disprove the existence of God or to prove that God does not exist, when they realize that the person is not truly looking for an argument, looking for evidence, looking for an answer, then the way they would treat that person, the way they would treat that argument would be very different. It's very important for us to be mindful of this concept. But another element to keep in mind in the context that we are living in, and keeping in mind the various things that are said with regards to the Holy Prophet and with regards to Islam, I feel is, instead of defending the Holy Prophet against those who are producing, whether it's cartoons or books or articles or whatever it is that are suggesting the Holy Prophet behaved in an inappropriate fashion, in an unacceptable fashion, if we want to defend him before a people that don't believe him, which I think is sometimes what is understood, we want to tell the people there's something said, the Holy Prophet is, God forbid, alayadu billah, a prophet of terrorism, a prophet of terror, a prophet that kills, and so on and so forth. We would want to go and tell those people who have seen that, who have read that, that this is not our prophet. That's one approach, and the first part of my talk was related to that. If we are going to be addressing that, we've got to be mindful of the reasons why they are producing this. If it's a genuine question, then you deal with it one way. If it's not a genuine question, you deal with it in a completely different way. You have to be mindful of that. But on a second point, I don't feel that we necessarily only need to defend the conduct of the Holy Prophet before that audience. I think that we need to defend, I'm using those words, that's part of the topic, but I already mentioned, we don't need to defend, we need to clarify certain things. But sometimes I feel, based on some of the things that have been said, that we need to defend the conduct of the Holy Prophet, not before non-Muslims, but before Muslims themselves. Before the audience that's here, before us, before the Shia. Let me give you some examples. I think the best examples were already mentioned in the first presentation. So you go over the concept of, for instance, the Holy Prophet marrying someone who was 6 years of age. Okay, well, you go over the evidence. And then you conclude that, for example, based on what was presented, I'm just using that, I haven't done independent research on that, I'm just quoting that. Well, what we heard is that, well, she was 13. Okay. Then I would still have that question. Are we willing to accept that a 50-plus-year-old man is going to marry a 12, 13-year-old girl? Is that acceptable? Do we consider that to be acceptable? Or do we not consider that to be acceptable? If we say that, well, the Holy Prophet had 9 wives, this many wives, a greater or a smaller number figure, definitely then at some point in time, more than 4 wives at once. Okay. Are we willing to accept that? Are we not willing to accept that? When it comes to war and battle, the question that was raised, so, and I heard about this, I wasn't here yesterday, and I don't know what exactly was said. So we hear, for instance, that there were certain poets that, and this is recorded in history, and I'm sure you heard some of that, I don't know what details, but there are accounts in history that suggest that the Holy Prophet ordered the assassination of certain individuals who hadn't actually killed a believer, but they were spreading rumors or they had written poetry against the Holy Prophet. How do we deal with this? These are questions that are internal. In other words, I need to have an answer as a Muslim, as a Shia, dealing with this. Now, I don't want to specifically address any of those issues, but what I do want to say is a couple of things to give us, again, direction in this regard, a little bit of direction. Starting with a point that I think I will emphasize in tonight's talk, if any of you guys are up and running at that time, I don't know with all these sessions if we're going to be awake at that time, but starting with this, that brothers and sisters, I hope and I pray that these sessions, these forums, these conferences are not where we come together, we hear a little something, and then we get up and leave with a bunch of questions that we don't find answers for, and we don't follow up with them. There's no reading, there's no thinking afterwards. I mean serious thinking, all right? Not chit-chat over dinner and then not reaching any conclusion. I mean serious thinking. Are these serious questions or not? I think there are serious questions. As a believer, I need to see how I'm going to be looking at the Prophet, how I'm going to be understanding the Holy Prophet. Am I going to be accepting certain behavior about him, or am I not going to be accepting of it? Or am I going to leave it as a question, like, I don't know? Any of those has got to have reason. It's important, brothers and sisters, that we continue thinking, reading, trying to gather information about this, right? We can't expect that in a 25-minute presentation, you're going to get all your answers or that you're going to get all your questions answered in a 15-minute Q&A after the presentations. We've got to learn that we need to read on these matters, follow up, think, and hopefully reach better conclusions. There are 2 points I would like to say with regards to us looking into these matters ourselves. Number one, when we're looking at such matters, when we pick up a history book and it says when the Holy Prophet married Aisha, for instance, he was at such and such age and Aisha was this old. Okay, how do we deal with that? Number one, there is a methodology that we need to understand through which we're able to look at history and draw conclusions. A general question, which I think the previous presentation also very quickly went through, is With regards to history in general, I think some of those questions are raised sometimes with regards to a number of issues. With regards to history, the various accounts that we have, knowing that we have the likes of Tabari, knowing that we have some of our history books that were written by, say, Aban al-Ahmar, are not available to us. What we do have available is what's there. How do we deal with history? Do we deal with history in this way that we say we accept whatever is out there? Whatever you found, whether it's in Tabari or Irshad of Shaykh al-Mufid, whatever you find in Kitab al-Ghaybah of al-Nu'mani or Ghaybah of Shaykh al-Tusi, whatever you find in the chapter of Tariq or the Rawdah of al-Kafi, do we accept it? Or do we say, look, we're not going to accept any of this? Or when they present us with something from history, we're going to ask them, can you give us a sanad? And then we realize that Irshad doesn't have any sanad. There's at least many of the accounts. I don't know about 100% of it. How do we deal with history? There's a particular methodology that has to take into account rational precepts that are developed in ilm al-kalam, like the isma of the Prophet, like the fact that we have proven in theology that the Quran is revelation, the Prophet is the Prophet of Allah, the Prophet is ma'asum, there are imams, the imams are ma'asum, and so on and so forth. We have to use all of that information and put all of that data together and then look at what we have in history. So the approach towards history that is sometimes seen in some of the works that we see that are produced that seem to be a little more genuine with regards to the character of the Holy Prophet, the approach that they take in suggesting how the Prophet was and how he behaved, their methodology is not necessarily one which we agree with. But if we are to present a different view, we've got to clarify what the methodology we're going to be using is. For example, we're entering this with the belief, with, of course, that belief, with arguments that we have presented in that other discipline, in kalam, in theology, that the Holy Prophet does not commit sin. So if we come across a hadith, and this was mentioned in the earlier presentation, when we come across a hadith, a history book that suggests the Holy Prophet did something that would be considered a sin, we say, well, no, the Holy Prophet wouldn't do that. This is number one. Methodology is really important. We have to clarify how we're going to approach history. The second point is, we've got to understand that some of what is said with regards to the Holy Prophet and us trying to defend the Holy Prophet against those ideas that have been presented in history books, in our view, perhaps, allegations against the Holy Prophet, the reason why we're not able to accept some of those is not because a matter of methodology, is not because some rational argument, is not because of some solid proof, but rather because of certain common standards that we have today before us. For example, I use one of the examples that I already did. What is wrong with the Holy Prophet getting married to someone who's even 6 years of age? Let's just go with the worst case scenario. All right? Worst case scenario. The Holy Prophet married a girl who was 6 years of age at the time when the marriage was formulated. So what is exactly wrong with this? Is there a rational argument against this? Is it something that is intrinsically wrong? If in today's culture, in today's context in the West, such a thing is unacceptable, is that a reason to not like that? To say that this is wrong? To find some justification and say, no, we're not going to accept that? I'm not suggesting that that is a response. I'm suggesting that that's a question we need to ask. If we don't feel comfortable about something that is recorded in history, if we don't feel comfortable about an account that says the Jews, one of the Jewish tribes outside of Medina, when the Holy Prophet dealt with them, he got all of the adult males of that tribe, and he had them executed, every single one of them. All right, so if we come across that, are we going to conclude that this cannot be true? If so, why? Are the reasons that we have real reasons, or is it just because in today's context, we don't seem to be accepting of it? Of course, I still have questions regarding that, because I don't know how we have so much problems with accepting something like that, but we're very silent about some of the worse incidents that are happening today, and we don't seem to have a problem with it. We don't seem to have an issue with that. So the second point is, and my time is up, that we've got to make sure the standards by which we are judging something to be wrong in history, and we want to use that to say this can't be true, we've got to make sure that standard is accurate, it is founded, and we're not using just the norms that are accepted, the values that are accepted in today's context. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen.